Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Trent Horn's still here. I didn't drive him away. That makes me happy. It is Friday. Close of business coming up, even on the West Coast. Even in Hawaii, they'll get to close of business within just a few hours. So
That is called a luau, actually.
Oh, I've never been to a luau.
Apparently, when they close the business day in Hawaii, I believe it is called a luau.
That's what, really? Yeah. Have a little pork and some poi and a little bit of
like those little rum punch tiki flame things on.
All right, you're messing up my show with
sorry,
this.
I
was trying to do a radio program here, and you got me.
I promise not to distract you anymore.
You put me in a reverie about wanting to
I will be good
in Hawaii.
Aloha.
Hawaii's so beautiful. Have you ever been there?
No, I actually haven't.
Do you notice something about Hawaii? Okay, now you've totally ruined the show. I'm just going to tell you this. You know how things, a lot of times in the brochure, they're not like what they look at? Like what they look like? When you get there, it's like, this is not as good as
I know. We have to update my picture in the Catholic Answers brochure.
Yeah. No, we don't want a realistic picture of any of us, Trent. But when you get to Hawaii, it doesn't disappoint.
Oh, wow.
Hawaii looks like you thought Hawaii was going to look. It is lovely. I like Hawaii.
Same as 2020 Gillespie, if anyone wants to come down to visit.
Don't give out the address.
In all its prestigious
glory. Don't give out the address of where we're... Yeah,
we even give out the address. You can find it on our website, catholic.com.
It makes me nervous when you give out the address.
Why? Someone might come and see you in your majesty?
Yes.
Your majestic...
In my majesty. Cy-Kelly
glory.
Right. That does make me nervous. Or that someone might meet me in the parking lot and want to straighten me out for something I've said on the air. Come here, fella. I'm going to straighten you out.
And then it's like, Cy Kellett, I love what you do. I'm a chiropractor. Here's a free service. And you're like, thank you.
Thank you. That was great. I do need to be straightened out.
So there you go.
All right, Trent Horn, can we get to the serious business?
We can try.
Alyssa Milano. No, we'll get to that later. I'm not going to talk about that one yet. We're doing Church in the World. There's lots of news out there. The church has much of the news in the world affects the church. Much of what the church does affects the news in the world.
Yeesh.
And we review those with Trent now on our last hour of the Friday show. Trent, of course, is the author of the brand new book, Counterfeit Christ, Finding the Real Jesus Among the Imposters. And he's never been to Hawaii.
I have not. No, I haven't counted, but I've been to, I don't know, probably about 30 states. I've been to Alaska. That was beautiful, but not over to Hawaii.
I've never been to Alaska.
Really?
No, and if I had a choice, I'd take Hawaii.
Really?
I've never even seen Alaska, and I'd take Hawaii. I'm not saying that to offend anyone in Alaska. One of my favorite bishops is up in Alaska.
There was something magical when I was out there outside of Juneau. You had the bald eagles were overhead, and the whales were right nearby. So it's beauty in different ways.
Chad Zelensky. He's the northernmost bishop in the United States.
Really?
Yeah, he's the bishop of the northern half of Alaska. He came in here and did an interview with us.
I would love
once.
To go. I've always wanted to go to, I forget the name of the town. It used to be called Barrow, but it was renamed. I actually talked about this on
the Council of Trent podcast, a more traditional local, native name, indigenous name. Yeah,
yeah.
And you probably can't even say it.
Yeah,
but I bet Chad Zelensky can. But he flies around in an airplane up there.
Oh, you have to. There's no roads. There's one road that goes up to Dead Horse. I forget the name. There's another town that's basically just a big oil refinery.
Let's call it Dead Horse. We don't know. Let's just call it Dead Horse.
Cold Point Dead Horse.
No, it's called Dead Horse. That's what we're going with. Stop wasting your time trying to figure it out on the internet. Just finish your story. It's called Dead Horse.
Yeah, so on
for the purposes of this
on
program.
World's Deadliest Roads, they do an episode where the drivers go, I think, from Fairbanks up through northern Alaska by road up to this northernmost town.
Which is called Dead Horse.
It's not Barrow or Utqiavik. That is the indigenous name.
I can't even believe how off point you get me. This is what I wanted to talk to you about. In your book...
Prudhoe Bay. It was Prudhoe Bay.
That's almost exactly the same.
No, but I'm
as Dead Horse.
No, I'm pretty
What's
sure.
What's wrong with you,
no,
Trent
No, I'm
Horn?
Pretty sure that there
That's
is.
That's got nothing to do with
I'm
Dead
pretty
Horse.
Sure
Dead Horse is actually a town where you come from. And you have all those kind of names in Arizona. You have crazy names for towns.
We have there's Coldfoot is the other town here I was thinking of. I think there's one like Cold Horse or Dead Horse.
Yeah,
in Arizona, we've got a little off ramp.
Can we?
The name of it is Table Mesa.
Table Mesa, which is just the same word in English and Spanish.
Which is table.
Table Mesa table.
Might as well be.
Okay, could we please get on to the topic?
I will be good.
Because when you say Table Mesa, that reminds me of Mexicali and Calexico. People who don't know about Mexicali and Calexico. don't know that. Do you know about that?
Well, are they the same city?
They're on two sides of the, U.S.-Mexican border.
I
on the Mexican side, it's called Mexicali, and on the American side, it's called Calexico.
Of course.
See what they did there?
I see.
Mexicali is a better city than Calexico. Oh, I don't think we're on in the Imperial Valley, too. I shouldn't have said that. Okay, in the book Counterfeit Christ, Trent, I've never been so thrown off at the beginning of a show as you have thrown me off with your weirdness.
I'm being good. I'm waiting.
One of the Christs that's a counterfeit Christ in here, I call him a Che Guevara Christ. You call him a socialist Christ.
Yeah, was Jesus a socialist?
But okay, so yeah, socialist Jesus I meant. Mm. All right, so this is a counterfeit Christ.
Yes.
Why? Why? Like, isn't Jesus kind of in a sort of way a socialist?
It depends what you mean by the word socialist. If by socialist you mean someone who cares about... Well, that's how it always goes down. If a socialist is someone who cares about the poor, well, then, yeah, Jesus is a socialist. But so are 99% of all other people except for social Darwinists that want the poor to die off.
Yeah.
I'm sure they I don't know. Ayn Rand may have cared about the poor. She just didn't think anyone was obligated to help them.
She wanted to die off.
Well, that's because they couldn't pull themselves up by their bootstraps. But that's another discussion for another time. But if you define socialism by its classical definition, it doesn't make sense to say whether Jesus was a socialist or not. Is like asking whether Jesus was a Republican, you know, in the modern sense of that term. Socialism did not come into existence until the early 19th century. And it was really a response to capitalism that had developed in the 14th century, 13th, 14th century in Italy. So socialists argued for, and there's lots of different kinds of socialists, but at their core, socialism argues for the rejection of private property or the severe limiting of private property and the ability to accumulate wealth. So there have been socialists who have argued for small, cooperatively owned enterprises and businesses. A most famous Catholic one started in the Basque region of Spain, the Mondragon Corporation. Although socialists and those who support socialism like Noam Chomsky actually say their Mondragon is too capitalist for them, even. Israeli kibbutz is another example.
Yeah.
There are organizations with their worker cooperatives, things like that. But classic socialism, like the kind you see, for example, in the Soviet Union, how China first developed the Great Leap Forward, Venezuela, that kind of socialism teaches that private property ought to be abolished. And usually it requires the state to be a central planning authority to plan the economy and to redistribute wealth.
Okay.
And Jesus never taught anything like that. Jesus taught that we were to help the poor and we were to be extremely generous with how God has blessed us. But he didn't say how to do that. And some people say, well, Jesus said we should all give up everything that we own. Jesus never taught that. Now, when he encountered the rich young man, he gave the rich young man a calling that was unique to him. You know, you've done well to follow the commandments, but sell everything you own and follow me. But the man was sad because he loved possessions more than Jesus. And that's what that revealed, not so that he refused to give away his stuff, but that he loved his stuff more than God. Compare that to Zacchaeus, when Jesus meets the tax collector Zacchaeus. And he sees Zacchaeus is zealous and holy and that he wants to get close to Jesus. Zacchaeus is short. He has to climb up a tree to see Jesus. And Jesus sees the little guy and he says, I got to have dinner with you at your house tonight, Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus is so enthralled by this, he says, Lord, I'll repay everyone I defrauded, because tax collectors defrauded people all the time back then, and I'll give away half my wealth. And Jesus didn't tell him, no, you got to give away all of it. Instead, he says, today salvation has come to this house.
Yeah.
There's another example when Jesus was approached by a man who said, make my brother share the inheritance with me. This is literally a case of someone coming to Jesus asking for wealth redistribution. And Jesus says, who made me a master over you? Beware of the love of money. You know, beware of money and beware of greed is what he told him instead. So it is an anachronism. You can't say Jesus was a socialist any more than you could say he was a capitalist.
No.
These things weren't invented.
They didn't exist. Yeah.
They didn't exist for 1400 years. And I'm actually working on this now in my book, Why Catholics Can't Be Socialists. That we're working on it now, but our central claim, what popes have claimed, have taught since, you know, Pope Leo XIII onward, is that Catholics cannot be true socialists who teach the abolishment of private property and all other kinds of government economic structures that violate subsidiarity and Catholic social teaching.
Are you going to get into how socialism, especially in its communist form, has tremendous atheist overtones?
Oh, absolutely. Because at its core, what socialism aims for, the very first socialists were called utopian socialists. The term comes about, I think the term is first comes about in 1822, socialism.
Mm-hmm.
And they strove for a utopian ideal on earth where people didn't have to work and wealth could be distributed evenly and there weren't any social ills. Now, Marx and his intellectual co-author Frederick Engels derided that kind of socialism. They said that's pie in the sky nonsense. The only way the bourgeoisie are going to give up their capital and their property is if the workers take it from them.
Mm-hmm.
And so Marx and Engels, actually, they predicted that in a wealthy industrial country, they thought England, there'd be a workers' revolution. And they were wrong about almost everything they predicted about England. They were right that England repealed what are called the Corn Laws. And this was a government law that prohibited trade in grain. They call it corn there. It was really grain.
Corn was synonymous with grain.
Yeah, because in America, we think of corn.
We think of it as a particular grain.
Yeah, they would call it maize. You know, but it's the trade of grain in order to keep the prices abnormally high to benefit grain owners, you know, the protective tariff, essentially. And that was repealed. That was like one of the few things Marx and Engels got right. But otherwise, there wasn't a massive workers' revolution in England. There were reforms in factories.
Yeah.
And so what you look at in Rerum Novarum, Pope Leo XIII's encyclical on socialism, he does not say, oh, well, just no socialism. He says no socialism. He says the socialist concerns about inhuman factory conditions in the 19th century are valid ones, and capitalists and owners and employers should not grind their workers into dust. But at the same time, what Pope Leo XIII and later Pope Pius XI taught was that, no, you can't take these valid concerns to justify depriving people of their natural right of private property, to be able to accrue wealth, to pass it on to others.
Right.
And that the system – so yeah, what happens is you – to get back to your question, socialists, classical socialists want to create a heaven on earth essentially, and Marx and other early socialists saw the church as an enemy their goals, because the church said, well, no, what matters most is pursuing holiness in this life, and that you don't have to get all of your happiness in this life. And so they saw the church as a distraction from their aims. You know, Marx said it's the opiate of the masses. And so atheism comes forward to say, no, if we make society better, if we fix society, we'll fix people. That's a very humanistic way of looking at the world, materialistic. Whereas the Christian view would say to fix society, you have to fix people, because society is people. Society is an aggregate of individual souls that need conversion. And so obviously we should fix unjust social structures. People can't flourish with racism, segregation. Women are burnt at the stake or stoned to death. You have to fix these things, unjust social structures. But at the end of the day, making society better isn't what makes people better. It's the other way around.
And if you created just social structures, if say you were more than half of us would claim that it was unjust to us. That's just human nature.
when you think
confronted with justice, we don't
You start with something that seems correct, and people will mutate it to their own needs, and that's what happens with socialism. When people, I love that criticisms of capitalism. Now, of course, capitalism is not perfect. We can have a discussion about that. And no Catholic ever says that it is. Pope John Paul II has a wonderful description of whether capitalism is good in his encyclical Centissimus Annus.
Yeah.
He basically says, well, is capitalism good? Well, if it's this bad kind, no.
Yeah.
But if it's this good kind that respects the dignity of workers, yes. So what I hate those people say, you know, it's greedy and there's exploitation and people – it provides an opportunity for people to exploit others. Why? Because capitalists have this kind of power over the worker. But actually, market economies are good ways of distributing power, not consolidating it in one place. If you have a free market to develop trade and business, that if that's your concern, your solution is, okay, let's just put all the power in this one centrally planned authority, like in the Soviet Union. The word Soviet is a Russian word that means council.
Uh-huh,
the idea here was that the Soviet Union is, we'll have this council of democratically elected representatives within the party, and they'll make sure for everyone's goods. But yeah, what happens is, what happened in the Soviet Union, you had the communists in charge, had all the nice things for them, and then you know, everyone else gets, you know, not even breadlines.
All right, so I'm going to need you to put in the book some prescriptions for the future then, because I can't just go with all the reflection on the past and what hasn't worked and what's wrong. I need you to help me out with what the Catholic Church prescribes for the future. But before we go to the break, because you can hear in my voice that we're going to the break.
Yes.
Do you know the word, and this is kind of a trick question, and I'm kind of hoping the answer is no.
Okay.
From the Soviet Union, the word Gozatism.
Gozat was, I thought that was the name for the party.
It's come, when we come back, I'm going to tell you what it means.
Okay, Gozatism.
A little insight into the values of the Soviet republics. All right, right back.
All right.
Right after this.
This is Bishop Chad Zelensky from the Diocese of Fairbanks of Northern Alaska, and you are listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live is proudly supported by CatholicChemistry.com, a new dating site for Catholics who want to do dating right and believe relationships start with Catholic chemistry. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicChemistry.com for their generous support on the web at CatholicChemistry.com.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul's Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Why do we need to pray? We don't pray because God needs our prayers. We pray because we need God's grace. And every day when I face the day, I realize I have no idea what I'm doing, and I need God to walk me through my day, step by step, giving me the grace, the counsel, the love, the encouragement that enables me to glorify Him in everything that I do and become the person He wants me to be. Prayer is my lifeline.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Trent Horn is here with us. We're talking about socialism right now as part of our two-hour Friday look at the state of the church and the world. Socialism not going very well in Venezuela right now. I just want to say that.
No, and what's funny is 15 years ago, 10 years ago, when it seemed to be going well, and Venezuela was benefiting from high oil prices and was able to subsidize a lot of their state entitlement programs after they had nationalized about 1,000 industries, there were celebrities who said, this is socialism, it's great, it works.
Yeah, look at how beautiful. Yeah,
and right. Now that it's failing, everybody says, well, it's not real.
It's not real. No, they haven't tried real socialism.
Whenever
yet.
It fails, it's never real socialism. Whenever
and it always turns out to be the enemy of the church too, whether it's in Cuba
always.
Or
always.
In in Russia or in Venezuela.
And so that's what we're talking about in the book. We talk about specifically that Catholics cannot be true socialists. And I think we'll probably include a fair amount of material saying they should be skeptical of economic policies that lead towards socialism. Because it's not a binary. You have, for example, in England, you have a mixture. You have national control of healthcare, but also a fair number of free market, private property. You obviously have private property, you have free market elements. You have mixtures in different, you know, you never have a rare to have pure, even in the early Soviet Union, you still had the kulaks. These were the people, private owners of farms who were getting wealthy, and that really made Stalin mad.
Yeah. Made Stalin mad.
Right. Our point is that classic socialism, Catholics cannot embrace that, and they should be skeptical of policies that seem to lead in that direction.
Yeah, and also this always ends up in murder, too, as it did with Stalin, and mass murder. And one time talking with an atheist who was saying if atheists could run the world, it would be so much better because it would be based on reason and science. And I pointed out that the Soviet Union was an officially atheist state. Right. And this person said, no, that is a historical myth that it was an atheist state. But Gozatism, I was going to tell you about
that. What is Gozatism?
State atheism. That was the policy.
It was called Gozat. It means party or state, right?
State atheism. That's what it means.
Okay.
It means if you want to be part of this, you got to be an atheist. That was the official term in the Soviet Union. And there was another term in China that I don't know.
And that's just a strange claim to say if we adopt atheism, obviously things will be fine, because atheism is not a moral or political philosophy.
No.
It's simply not a belief in God. And so what comes from that is really anyone's guess. Now, you have a better time if you argue, well, with this particular godless moral system, we would have things. I could hear you out a little bit more there, but just taking God out of the picture doesn't mean it'll work. And then even putting God in, people will not listen to God or, you know, not follow the teachings that Christ has given us. So that's a challenge to us as well. Before you go to the caller, I have to say, by the way, I was right. I was right.
Dead Horse Alaska. You were right. You found it in
Prudhoe Bay. It's called Dead Horse. It's an unincorporated community of Prudhoe Bay. It is called Dead Horse Alaska. I knew I was right about
that. I told you.
Okay.
John in Chicago waited a long time watching on YouTube Live. Thanks for waiting, John.
Thank you for waiting.
Or comment for Trent. Do we still have you there, John in Chicago? John totally just dropped at the very second.
I didn't
push the wrong button. Let's go to Jermaine in Nashville, Tennessee, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Jermaine, don't go away. I know you waited a long time. You got a question or comment for Trent?
Yes, I do. I just wanted to know, I'm a new convert to the Catholic Church, and I just wanted to know, where do I start my studies? Because I've learned how to defend the Protestant faith, so I just wanted to kind of figure out how to, you know, get a basic of defending the Catholic faith.
What are you looking for, Jermaine, in particular, when you say, like, what the Catholic Church teaches, or, like, some of these moral issues in the world? What are you looking for?
Just what the Catholic Church teaches, because, like, you know, when I go to talk to my Protestant friends, you know, the two things that are going to pop out is Marian doctrine and, you know, praying to the dead for intercession.
Sure. Well, if you want resources on that, you've come to the right place. I would definitely, of course, recommend our website, Catholic.com, our different articles and videos there. Of my own resources, what I could recommend for you would be my book, Why We're Catholic. It's a great primer on how to defend the faith. It's a nice, easy introduction. And when you're done with it, you can always hand it off to somebody. It works well for that. If you want an in-depth look at how to answer arguments related to Protestant objections, like dealing with Mary or the intercession of the saints, I would recommend my book, The Case for Catholicism, that's published by Ignatius Press, actually. So it's my book, The Case for Catholicism, Answers to Classic and Contemporary Protestant Objections. And then we have a lot of other books and resources here. Like my colleague Tim Staples wrote the best book on Marian apologetics there is, called Behold Your Mother. So our website, my books might be helpful on those subjects, especially Case for Catholicism. And just for yourself, edifying yourself and reading, really focus on the New Testament and the Catechism. I do a scripture study and a catechism study on my own podcast for subscribers called Trenhorn at trenhornpodcast.com, which you can also learn how to defend the faith if you subscribe there, which you can subscribe for free. Members get access to my scripture and catechism studies. That is at trenhornpodcast.com. But those are some resources I might throw in your direction. Is that helpful for you?
Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Hey, hang on, Jermaine. Don't go anywhere, because I got one more for you. Carlo Broussard, one of the apologists here, just recorded a 3-part podcast on Intercession to the Saints, where he goes through all of the objections and he answers those objections. It's on Catholic Answers Focus right now. If you just search Catholic Answers Focus, as a matter of fact, the first part went up 2 days ago, and then it'll go up over the course of the next 2 weeks. Jermaine, thanks very, very much for your call. Let's go to Darren in South Central Pennsylvania, watching on YouTube Live. Darren, your comment or question for Trent.
Good evening. Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to.
Trent, I would like to know, your family, your dad, was he an employee or a small business owner? Or what's your experience with capitalism is what I want to know. I'm American like you, and
sure.
I did spend some time in Sweden, but I know American capitalism mostly.
Sure. My father stayed at home to raise us, and my mom worked for what was at one time the largest monopoly in the country, Ma Bell, phone company. And then she left that, and now they work. They still hold jobs right now, and they're in their near retirement. But that's kind of my background, I guess, with employment and work and things like that. Is there anything else you wanted to know, or you want to know what I thought about farming?
Yeah, well, I'm from a farming. I'm historically my heritage is Mennonite.
Yeah,
I became a Catholic mostly because of Chesterton.
Wow.
Two years ago, but Yeah, both my grandfathers were farmers, mm-hmm. and my dad was a carpenter. But I kind of have this great sense of loss because of the concentration of power in our country in the past three generations.
And, well, in the farming industry, Jermaine, isn't it the case that many farms have been consolidated into giant agribusiness? Am I right about that?
That's absolutely right. And see, that's what I want to talk about with the book that you're writing, Trent.
We can chat about that, sure.
Hang on, Jermaine, because the music's playing. We got to take a break. We'll be right back to talk about, I'm assuming we'll get to distributism too, Jermaine. We'll talk about the farming situation and Trent's new book coming out soon on socialism. Right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Jesus asked his disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" Turns out that today, as back then, this question has a lot of different answers. So many groups want to appropriate Jesus, tweaking his identity until he looks and sounds just like one of them. But then you no longer have the Lord, says apologist Trent Horn. You have an imposter. In his new groundbreaking book, Counterfeit Christ, Trent exposes 18 phony versions of Jesus that we encounter today, helping you to recognize the fakes when you see them, explain why they're phony, and make a case for the full truth and beauty of who Jesus is, the Christ, the Son of the living God. Order your copy of Counterfeit Christ today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Have you subscribed to the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter? This is Catholic Answers Live host Cy Kellett, and I want to tell you about our new weekly newsletter full of behind-the-scenes information and facts you need to know about the show. It's easy to sign up. Just visit CatholicAnswersLive.com and look for the newsletter sign-up box on the front of the page. It's a great way to keep up to date with what's happening with the show and see what's coming in the days ahead, delivered weekly into your inbox. Sign up today for the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter and see what you've been missing. Go to CatholicAnswersLive.com.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking book by apologist Trent Horn, that one book you can give to anyone as a starting point for helping them to find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Trent Horn is our guest. We're talking about the church in the world today. And on the line is a man with long experience with farming as a Mennonite and a child of Mennonites and a grandchild of Mennonites. Darren, we still have you with us in South Central Pennsylvania.
Darren, you there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Oh, okay.
So, Darren, when we were talking earlier, you were asking for my thoughts because I'm writing a book on why Catholics can't be socialists. And, of course,
right.
People can't be socialists. The church isn't endorsing one single unified theory on capitalism or capitalism unqualified. And we will talk about capitalism in the book that I'm writing. Actually, I'm writing it with a Catholic economist. I'll probably announce that more formally here later on.
Okay,
but your thoughts are what I think about, like the consolidation of farms in relation to capitalism and socialism, things like that.
Basically, the loss of culture due to this is like what you were saying earlier when we have a problem with culture. Sorry, I have a son that's crying here. I'm on the phone.
I'm used to that.
We
no worries.
Really like babies here, so.
Yeah. See, I learned to say poor baby a lot here recently. That helps a lot, just to say poor baby to everybody that has a problem. Okay, that's enough.
All right.
Well, so I guess here are my thoughts on this, that whenever you make changes in society, there are going to be positives and negatives for people. There's going to be people who benefit and people who who are harmed or people who don't benefit as much. So as farming technology has increased, and as, you know, you have a capitalist and free market system, you know, on the one hand, you say, well, farms have become consolidated and we've lost like the traditional family-owned farms and these smaller farms. But at the same time, I think there's been a lot of progress in the United States from that. I mean, back in the 19th century, 90% of the labor force worked in agriculture, whereas today that is down to about 3%. And that shift in the labor force has brought all kinds of different technology and enterprises and resources that provide a lot of goods to people. So I think that's a good thing. Now, when it comes to consolidating of farms, I mean, I don't think it's good when they're, and this is straying a little bit into prudential judgment areas. I'm not saying this is what the church teaches, but things to watch out for would be things like in farming or any kind of industry where there's, you don't have competition or you have monopolies. So one element of capitalism is the question of, should monopolies be broken up with things like antitrust laws? Should Monsanto own every single farm in the world? Or, how do we deal with that? Does that provide for the common good? Or should we prevent companies from getting a stranglehold on the market? Or if you allow the market to naturally expand, people will be able to overcome monopolies. People used to say the railroads had a monopoly and you're always going to have the railroads in charge. And yet, with truck companies and with airplanes, that's actually not the case anymore. So I guess that's I would say with capitalism, it's a bit of a mixed bag there. But if you look in the Soviet Union, it didn't work well for farmers. They were forced into collective farming or they were sent off to Siberia.
But what I think I'm – and I'll give it back to you, Darren. I feel like I'm a little more protective. I'm more of a protectivist than you are, Trent, because – the destruction of local communities by the kind of money and power that mass culture can bring into those local communities seems to me something that that there's a loss of social value in that. That's a genuine loss of social value, and we should have done a better job protecting those communities.
Well, I think that that goes into a prudential judgment of what to do with communities to maintain stability within communities.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely, Darren, I don't want to hold you off too much longer. I definitely want to get your thoughts. But I think that when it comes to providing communal stability, that was primarily something that religions provided, whether they were Christian or not.
Yeah.
And so I think that in many areas with the loss, you know, decrease in religiosity, we've lost those communal ties. We've lost some of those social ties of banding together. But at the same time, we have to say, well, when farms are consolidated and local farms start to go out of business, we act like one company caused this, when we have to look at consumers who have made voluntary choices to purchase goods that are offered at a cheaper price by these larger companies, to say, well, have they made their decision known and have they made a good decision? That's something we can have up to debate. Did they make a good decision in choosing to buy these cheaper goods? And was this better for society overall? That's what's hard when you get into things like economics. And what I said with our caller earlier about prudential judgments, it gets really complicated. That's why in my book Counterfeit Christ, I quote where the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith talks about how when it comes to the question, this is what the CDF says on prudential judgments. When it comes to the question of interventions in the prudential order, it could happen that some magisterial documents might not be free from all deficiencies. Bishops and their advisors have not always taken into immediate consideration every aspect or the entire complexity of a question. Now, it goes on to say it would be mistaken. You know, it's contrary to truth to say the magisterium is habitually mistaken in its prudential judgments.
Right.
But in trying to offer, the church offers us guidance in these important areas like Darren is talking about. But as you see, they become quickly complex socially, politically, economically,
right,
scientifically, as we try to get the best solution. So,
Darren,
what do you think?
Yes.
What?
I think that I thought when Cy said that about the loss in our local communities, I do think that maybe this kind of loss of ownership in the United States is just us paying for the – maybe religion is always first. It's just us paying for the Protestant breakdown and the splits, and that's the basic loss of community there. Mm. And then the business just stepped in, and just said, okay, well, money is number one if religion is not important to Americans.
Oh, and then in many ways, business does replace religion in the same way that for many people, patriotism replaces religion.
Yeah, you try to fill a void. You know,
it doesn't mean that patriotism is bad or the business is bad, but it is bad when those things become religious.
It's taking a role it was never meant to fill. A great book on this, though, Si, I would recommend is Robert Putnam's book, Bowling Alone, The Collapse and Revival of American Community, that he goes over and talks about other things like the loss of bowling leagues, for example. That used to be prominent, you know, back in the 50s and 60s that have gone out of fashion because we've lost these communal ties and we live, our community is just a bunch of people online or on Snapchat or our cell phones.
Yeah. Darren, I want to give you the last word because you are the expert on farming communities. Want to leave us with some wisdom?
Yeah. When you buy something, don't buy it cheap. Just pay money if it's going to be somebody that you know that's going to get it.
Ah, okay.
There's more than one kind of cost,
right?
That you pay for something.
Darren, thank you very, very much for that call. Appreciate it. That all came out of our conversation about socialism, which is just one part of our conversation of the church and the world today. I want to get to one more call before we go on to our next topic, because I said I did want to talk about Alyssa Milano. I wasn't joking. I do want to talk about that. But let's get another call in here before we go to that. Justin in North Carolina watching on YouTube live. Your question or comment, Justin?
First I want to say sorry if I sound funny. I'm just getting over a cold. But my question is, I just came into the Catholic Church Easter last year, so there's still some areas that I'm kind of struggling to really learn a lot in. And one of those areas that I really don't know a lot about in is papal infallibility and when exactly it is to be applied and how to apply it. And one of my biggest things is, see, I'm pro-death penalty, and I know for a Catholic, that's kind of a touchy subject.
You
and
think?
I know late. Yes?
No, I was just teasing because you're exactly right. That is a very touchy subject right now.
And I know Pope Francis is actually speaking. He's actually spoke about it pretty recently. And from what I understand, the church's position on it is the death penalty should only be applied if there's no other way to protect society from that person. And in today's world, that's kind of inconceivable when we can lock people up forever and ever. But my position is, well, if you got people running around murdering women and children, I want those people done away with. Me personally, I think they deserve the death penalty.
Wait, running around they are free and the only way to stop them from killing women and children is by executing them? Or they've been incarcerated for murder?
Well, okay. My understanding has always been with the church, the church, their only acceptable application of the death penalty is if there's no possible way to protect society from the killer. So if you can lock them in prison forever and ever, we don't need to use the death penalty on them. That's always been my understanding.
That was what the Catechism articulated prior to a change last year that Pope Francis ushered in. That previously, under Pope St. John Paul II, the Catechism said the circumstances where the death penalty would be required were rare, if not practically non-existent. Now the Catechism essentially is calling for the abolishment of the death penalty, saying that it's inadmissible. And so I can see where if you struggle with this, at first this is not an issue of papal infallibility. The Pope has not declared this to be an infallible teaching of the Church. There's not any organs of infallibility being utilized in making this definition, making this teaching. However, that doesn't mean it's a teaching that we as Catholics can ignore. It requires the religious submission of our minds and wills, that we accept this as a teaching, even if it's something that we can struggle with, we can have concerns about it. We just can't vocally protest it or vocally object to it in an improper way. There's very limited opportunities for theologians to be able to voice concerns and objections to this kind of teaching, but not for the laity to really do. So where you have a concern about this, and I see where you're coming from, this is something that had concerned me for a while as well. But there were some things that actually kind of helped me. I kind of wanted to just think through the issue, Justin, and there were two things. One, at first I always thought, well, look, what about really poor countries? What if they need the death penalty? But then when I've looked around the world, the poorest countries in the world, like in sub-Sahara Africa, they've actually abolished the death penalty. The death penalty is primarily practiced in the United States, China, North Korea, and in Muslim theocracies. Most of the rest of the world has abolished it. And second, the logic, the moral logic behind opposing the death penalty kind of gets to this question. Is it okay to kill somebody when you don't have to? That, you know, if somebody breaks into my home, is going to shoot my wife and kids, well, and if I have the means to stop them, including fatal means, I'm going to do it. But if they run away from me, or let's say I tie them up and the police are on their way and they're not a threat, and I say, you're going to get what's coming to you, and I shoot him, well, that would be wrong. He's not a threat anymore. So, like, well, if I can't kill somebody who's no longer a threat, why does the state get to do that? And so that strikes at the core tension of the state having the ability to take life when it doesn't have to. So those are some things that are helpful for me thinking about this. I don't know. I hope they're helpful for you. Any other thoughts or questions? Or
Justin?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess the first thing is I know the situation where obviously executing a would-be burglar, that's obviously murder. But I was always under the impression that if society says this person murdered children, you know, if society imposes a death penalty, it's justice versus murder, which to me would be it's a different logic. But really, like I said,
well, I mean, I could even – well, the thing is, Justin, I could even change it. Let's say he had murdered my wife, you know, and I managed to tie him up now. Now the rejoinder there is, well, you can't kill him because that's vigilantism. Whereas, you know, the state has the right to do that. But that doesn't always work that way. For example, both myself and the state don't have the right to torture somebody as part of a punishment. So there are different thinkers that have put forward arguments saying that the death penalty is always wrong philosophically. Christopher Tollefson is one of these individuals, and there are others who disagree with him, of course. But I think at the end of the day, some resources that may help you on this question. If you stay on the line, Justin, give us your email. I'll send you an article my friend Jimmy Akin wrote about the church's teaching on this question and how Catholics should respond to it. It's, even if you have doubts or concerns, like, well, can I be Catholic and still think the death penalty is okay? Where do you draw the line? If you stay on the line and give us your email, I will send you that article by Jimmy. And I did a whole podcast on this subject that goes into it in greater length. I'd be happy to send to you.
Justin, it's great news to us that you are in the Catholic Church, and we're always here to reason it out with you if you want. I think you are certainly not alone among Catholics who are struggling with this one right now. So it's always a welcome call because it gives us a chance to reflect on it some more. So we feel welcome to call again.
Yes, sir.
All right. And hang on, because Trent's going to send you that. I think we should probably send him Jimmy's book, Teaching with Authority, because he started the call with a question about how to know
infallibility.
About papal infallibility, and that's the perfect book for it. So if you'll hang on, we'll send you both of those. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Trent Horn, The Church in the World, right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, this is Archbishop Alexander Sample of the Archdiocese of Portland in Oregon. Keep that dial right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Catherine Zeltner.
There are so many misconceptions when it comes to abortion and assisted suicide. It's really confusing, and I think for a lot of people, they don't know how to talk about these things. EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, we help to change that. We help to really untangle these web of lies. Listeners can expect to become informed and then grow more confident so that they can then discuss and dialogue these issues, and together we can really impact culture in that way.
EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, Sunday morning at 10 a.m. on EWTN Radio.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn here with us. We're talking about a lot of news stuff today because our theme this Friday is the church and the world, and we're taking a look at various ways in which the world maybe is influencing the church influencing the world, and things that where there's the confluence of those two realities. And Trent, I said I wanted to talk about Alyssa Milano. Alyssa Milano is an actress, and she used to be on what was that Tony? I really like Tony Danza. What was that show that they used to?
Who's the boss?
Who's the boss? Yeah.
Who's the boss? Tony Danza.
Who's the boss? And she's been in all kinds of other things, like the TV show Charmed. And I like her a lot. I think she's a very good actress. I've enjoyed her work. But she is also a campaigner for LGBT issues and a campaigner for abortion, really. I don't know how else to put it. I was looking for a softer way to say it. But she wants there to be unlimited availability to abortion. And so she's mad about the laws that are being passed, and it just seems clear to everyone the reason these laws are being passed in various states is the states are ready for a Supreme Court challenge to the unjust rulings in the Casey decision and the Roe decision. Unjust in multiple ways, but among the ways is taking away from the voters what is their right to vote on, and reserving that to judges who were not given that authority to take that away from the populace in the Constitution. But judges don't care about that a lot of the time. So Melissa Milano's idea is, well, we'll have a strike, a marital Congress strike. That's what I'm going to be calling it, a marital Congress strike.
Oh, the pledge to not engage in the Marital Act until the bill is withdrawn, I guess, or it's overturned.
I'm not exactly sure when. I feel like, in fairness to her husband, there should be some specification about when this will end.
Yeah,
what
I don't
the
know.
Terms are.
I'm not sure if she's going on strike or not. I think she might be calling on the women of Georgia to do it. I didn't catch that. Yeah, this has a long pedigree. There's actually some feminists who are not happy about her saying
no,
this,
there's a lot of people who are not happy, but they find it a kind of trivializing a very serious thing.
Right. This is.
I don't think she means to trivialize it.
Well,
actually,
you could call this Operation Lysistrata. That was actually in Aristophanes' play Lysistrata. The women want the Spartans to stop fighting, so they go on a marital Congress strike.
And then Spike Lee made a movie about that.
Lysistrata?
Yeah, he made the play Lysistrata into a musical set in Chicago.
Ah, okay. So the idea goes back a long time. But there's something very humorous about this, that in her post say, well, why? Her reasoning is, if abortion's not legal, women can't take the risk of getting pregnant, so we are not going to engage. We can say SEX, can't we? We say it all the time. Women aren't going, can't we?
I have my standards. You have your standards. Do whatever you want.
Standards
I'm
and
not,
practices.
I'm not in charge of you.
Okay.
Dead
sex.
Horse, Alaska man.
Yeah. Dead Horse is a real place. I bet there's a town called Sex, probably. Sussex.
Sussex.
SX. That's in England.
Could you please return to the gravity of this issue?
It is, but it's silly, kind of, because saying women aren't safe to have sex unless abortion is available, so we're going to go on strike. But I thought that people like Alyssa Milano believed that contraceptives granted one the ability to have quote-unquote safe or safer sex. So she's actually proving the point that if you're worried about getting pregnant, don't have sex. If I were to say that, say, hey, are you worried about getting pregnant and you might think of needing an abortion? Why don't you try abstinence? People like Alyssa Milano would decry me as a misogynistic bully. But she's saying the same thing. If you're worried about getting pregnant and thinking of having an abortion, you should not have sex. So actually, Alyssa Milano has become essentially an abstinence education.
Okay, here's the problem with that.
abstinence education.
I really got to say what the problem is. Because somebody wrote an article, I think it was at the Babylon Bee.
No, it was Eye of the Tiber.
Eye of the Tiber, okay. Yes. So at the Eye of the Tiber, they wrote an article saying that Catholic Answers had hired Alyssa Milano as a chastity speaker. It's funny. The premise of that is funny.
Yes.
But it has caused us some problems because there are people who believe that Catholic Answers is now promoting Alyssa Milano as a speaker. And as much as we might like Alyssa Milano as an actress, she can't be a speaker for us because she doesn't believe what the Catholic Church teaches.
Let's keep that "we" in a somewhat more.
Oh, she's a
sense.
Fine actress. Leave her. Come on.
Now, if we're talking about who's the boss and we're talking about Tony Danza, that would be one thing.
I really like Tony Danza. I wish there was more work from Tony. I'm not being fresh at all. I really like Tony Danza.
As the song once said, "Hold me close now, Tony Danza."
It does not say that.
It's
Tiny Dancer.
Sure Tony Danza.
No, you're wrong.
So the point you're making with Alyssa Milano, though, is.
Okay. The 2 points. One, she does not work for Catholic Answers. So if you're reading that on the internet, please leave us alone. Or don't leave us alone.
Do come and support the work of Catholic Answers. Because some people have said, and I'm not joshing or ripping on anybody who's done this, that It is unfortunate some people are not familiar with Eye of the Tiber, that it is a parody magazine and website.
Right.
And so reading from that reached the erroneous conclusion we support Alyssa Milano and we've hired her to be a speaker. And so some people have even said they don't want to support Catholic Answers anymore. And we've tried to explain, no. That's,
and a random poll says 50% of us here are fans of her acting abilities.
It's a very limited poll that you've probably conducted in the last two seconds.
It's the two of us. And 50% of us, me. So, I like her as an actress.
I have lots of people to choose from. She's not my top echelon. That's all. I'm not denigrating her as an actress or anything.
I'm not saying she's Angelica Houston. Okay. I'm just
fair. Right. That's fair enough.
Or Dame Judi Dench.
So this has happened before. This has happened before with Eye of the Tiber. They did an article.
Or Molly Ringwald.
They did an article in Eye of the Tiber saying the Catholic Answers was closing because we had answered every single question about the faith. And we had multiple people call and email us,
but it is funny though,
begging us to not
funny
close,
article.
Begging us not to close Catholic Answers.
Yeah, but I do get the feeling though, there are some people on the internet who need to be reminded the internet is not synonymous with the truth. Come on, like if you've used the internet at all, you realize that practically the purpose of the internet is for people to have a place to say stuff that probably shouldn't be said at all.
Or stuff that needs to be said. For example, we have passed over the most sobering thing that has happened today that we need to discuss. And that would be the tragic passing of Grumpy Cat at the young old age of 7 years old for a cat, which is like losing someone in their late 30s.
Grumpy Cat.
That was a different cat, but
oh, okay.
So Grumpy Cat, probably the internet's most famous cat,
died,
passed away, complications from a urinary tract infection. Her real name, though she is known affectionately online as Grumpy Cat, her real name is Tardar Sauce.
Tardar Sauce?
Yes, not Tartar. Tardar.
Tardar Sauce.
Tartar. Little Tartar Sauce has passed away, and so
don't you think there are many grumpy people? I just want to say when grumpy people pass away, I think a lot of them get over it immediately. Like as soon as you're on the other side, you go, I got nothing to be grumpy about. It's okay.
I would hope so.
I think that happens.
Yeah, and I think that if centuries upon centuries of theologians are incorrect and Grumpy Cat does go to heaven, I think Grumpy Cat, the beatific vision is powerful enough to make Grumpy Cat smile.
No, a cat cannot have the beatific vision. A cat cannot.
No, well, a cat
because God can only be apprehended intellectually.
That is true. The cat would not have the beatific vision, but if the centuries of theologians are wrong, God's love, mercy, and tenderness for creation may allow the cat to enjoy all the sublime blessings a cat can enjoy for eternity.
Yeah.
But that would counter. We have tons of articles on the. We have a few articles on the website about whether dogs go to heaven. There was a documentary a few years ago saying that all dogs go to heaven, and another one, the second one, saying that they go to heaven.
All dogs go to heaven too,
and all dogs go to heaven too. Yeah. But
all dogs still go to heaven,
right? But with Grumpy Cat, it does make me think that if Grumpy Cat passed away at like halfway through the lifespan of a cat, normally,
yeah, it's not good for you to be grumpy.
You know, don't try not to be grumpy, folks. If you're listening,
no.
Notice Cy and I have had a fair amount of levity in our conversation these past 2 hours.
it probably entertained only us, but yeah, okay.
So hopefully you will have some levity for that in your weekend, and hopefully we haven't made people grumpy and shortened their lifespans. I certainly hope not. But if you enjoy a little bit of levity and fun commentary on the church and Catholicism and our faith, definitely listen to Catholic Angels Live and my own podcast, TrentHornPodcast.com, or I'm always talking about the faith and little fun things. So I've got serious things like 9 questions to ask your pro-choice friends about all this abortion stuff in the news, and also my Free For All Friday fun episodes. Today's episode is Nostalgia Isn't What It Used to Be. At TrentHornPodcast.com. Did you know in the 17th century, nostalgia was an illness treated with leeches? It's true.
I did not know that.
And now you
know. In the which century? 17th century?
Like 17th, 18th century. They used leeches and buried people alive who had it. Very serious condition.
That seems very mean.
Don't be nostalgic for that. But if you're interested in the fun stuff like that and how to defend our faith, check out TrentHornPodcast.com.
And don't go the way of Grumpy Cat. The Lord is risen. He is, just as he said, he is risen. There's every reason to be full of joy, despite many of the things that we've had the chance to talk about these hours. Among the good things in this world, Trent Horn and all his good books. Trent, thanks for a very fine hour.
And Cy Kellett, you're a good thing in this world as well.
Thank you very much. Jesus Christ is the light of the nations. And we'll see you next time
on Catholic Answers Live.